This week on the show, it's the return of Hot Take Thursday. We've got NFL free agency, playoff races, spring training, and more. All of that coming up, plus your takes. Calling It starts right now. Welcome into the Calling It podcast, recording at noon on Thursday, March 14th. My name is Alex Barth. I am, as always, joined by Alex Lebowitz. We are powered by CLNS Media. Lebowitz, what's up?
Not much. Not much is up. I'm just hanging out and enjoying NFL free agency, the frenzy that is, and gearing up for March Madness.
Yeah, it's been a wild couple of days for sure. Some of the deals are starting to settle in now. Obviously, here in New England, not so much, but elsewhere across the league, I think teams are kind of checking most of their boxes. We're going to get more into free agency in the second segment. So the way we're going to do the show today, we're just going to give a couple of thoughts on the week that was here to start it off. And then we tweeted out yesterday, we wanted people's hot takes. We want to break them down. So we had people send them their way. We're going to read them. But there were some topics we want to talk about that the takes did not discuss. So we just got to get through those real quick. So I will say, Lebowitz, because I know it's your take, it's my take. A couple people had hot takes for this. So put a pin in everything Odell Beckham related, because we'll talk about that to start the second segment. Give me one other takeaway from free agency.
One other takeaway from free agency.
Yeah.
Le'Veon Bell maybe made a bad decision. I think him going to the Jets is not really going to do much for them. I still think there's a lot of holes there. You still have a developing quarterback, and they're kind of doing the same thing they've done in years past, trying to stack up on defense. We've seen a lot of praise in years past over that defensive line. We saw how that turned out. I'm still skeptical into how they're going to adjust the season with a new coach and kind of an overhauled roster. So from an AFC East perspective, that's kind of the thing I'm looking at. And until the Jets prove me wrong, I'm going to continue to doubt them.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that was actually what I was going to talk about. I thought that was an interesting signing. I'll say elsewhere, I think that the trade market, my big takeaway is that the trade market has been a buyer's market, right? You saw what Antonio Brown went for, what Odell Beckham went for, what Dee Ford went for, and guys are just not getting the return I think a lot of people expected. Maybe that's because these players aren't as valued internally and around the league as we think they are, but when we get a little closer to the draft, I think that specifically for the Patriots, it's going to be huge because they're a team that loves to trade and they're a team that loves to take advantage of weak markets. And this is a team that's probably going to need to make some trades, especially at the wide receiver position, even if they sign Golden Tate, which, calling it curse, odds are they probably will. I'm literally checking Twitter as we record this, but you know, we're going to get off at, I don't know, 12:45 and they'll sign him at 12:48. But this is a team that's going to need to make some trades. I think for a team that's giving up picks and getting players, it's a really good market. The Patriots have 12 picks. They can't make them all. They don't have enough room on their roster to do that. In theory, they could, but they'd have to cut some of them, and Bill Belichick's not going to waste picks like that. So it's been very interesting to me seeing some of the returns on these trades, and I know there's other factors like with Brown and the contract and all that, but definitely a buyer's trade market right now. All right, NBA. Give me one take from the NBA.
From the NBA? Oh, geez.
Yeah, just the last week.
The last week in the NBA. Yeah, I think I'll just stick with the Celtics, I guess. I think that they still have a lot to prove. They went three straight and then got demolished by the Clippers. Again, I'm not buying into them, and they haven't really shown me anything of substance, at least for a substantiated amount of time. So, yeah, I'm just waiting and seeing. I know one of the hot takes had to do with the Celtics, and that hot take, which we'll get to, I don't think was that hot of a take given what we've seen in the past few weeks from this team, or really this entire season. What we saw on that West Coast trip, it doesn't prove anything. You beat Golden State, fine. It's fluky at this point until they show me otherwise.
My take on the NBA, just one thought I had from the NBA this past week, was that Serge Ibaka fight.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you saw that with Marquise Chriss. That was wild. That I don't necessarily know that I have a takeaway other than that was a heavyweight bout, right? We see guys get in there and start shoving, and with Celtics Warriors, right, you had Terry Rozier and DeMarcus Cousins, which is funny, but you know, it was a lot of talking for not a lot of action. No, Serge Ibaka and Marcus Chris went at it. That was, and those are two, quite large, in shape gentlemen. So, yes. that was,
did you see what Evan Turner said on Twitter?
Yeah, I did. I did.
He was asked, like, what would you do if your teammate was doing that? He's like, you know, I'd duck and dive. You pretty much right. Say that he'd give off the impression that he's trying to square off with him while doing everything in his power to not do so. It's really funny and honest. Serge Ibaka is a big dude, and I don't think most people in the NBA would want to you know fight him.
Right.
So yeah, that would be a very scary thing to have to face.
An absolute slugfest. NHL. Any takeaways from the NHL this week?
Not really. I don't really have anything. I guess I'll do what I just did last time and stick to the Bruins. A couple bad losses back to back. First time we've seen that in quite a long time. And it's the first really bad game we've seen from Tuukka Rask in a very long time. It's just, yeah, I hope it doesn't linger. I don't think it will. I think that you're going to see these ups and downs, but it does kind of concern me as we inch closer towards the end of the season. If it does linger, you just don't want that heading into the postseason. So my biggest concern is, you know, will this affect Tuukka in the future? Probably not worth looking into or digging deep into too much. But yeah, it was kind of that 1-7-4 blowout loss that they just had. That's what's stuck out to me with the Bruins, at least.
See, I kind of have the opposite takeaway in that they had the 17-game point streak. And I think I said this on the show two or three weeks ago, that there was going to be kind of a lull in there because they were playing at such a high level. It was not going to be sustainable through June. You know, they were going to lose some games. And to be down 5-1 and get back within 5-4, and you talk about it being 7-4, I mean, there was a power play goal and an empty net goal in there to get it to 7-4 from 5-4. So this is a team playing without two of their top six forwards in Jake DeBrusk and a David Pastrnak. Tuukka, you're right, hasn't looked great, but I think that he's about to get some rest, like we talked about last week, managing him and Halak. I think we'll see Halak carry not the burden of the load, but a good amount of the load between now and the playoffs. So for a team that realistically should be going through a lull right now, the last couple games the Bruins have played, that one against the Penguins, which was, I think, closer than the score indicated, and then the same against Columbus. I mean, to come back down and score three unanswered goals and to get it to 5-4 from 5-1, that's a pretty good lull for most teams. And sure, they got no points out of it, but they're still clicking. And I think once they get DeBrusk back and once they get David Pastrnak back, and I haven't heard anything about Marcus Johansson. I don't know if he's coming back or not, but those are the three good players they're missing. So
yeah,
I don't think I'm as discouraged as most. Now, if the Bruins still haven't picked up a point by the time we record the show next Friday, yeah, I'll be singing a different tune. But a couple rough games after the streak they had, missing the players they're missing, I'm really not putting too much stock into that right now.
Yeah, and then I mean, that's a key point. One, they never really play the Penguins well. That was their first loss of that two-game skid. And the game against the Blue Jackets was not as lopsided as it came across, and you're still getting production offensively, which is good to see. Every goalie has a bad game. That was one of them for Tuukka. But you know, we've seen it before and we've seen him bounce back before.
And I mean, it's just feeling like, you know, 2011, 2013, because Marchand, Bergeron, oh, yeah, and Krejci and David Krejci are all, you know, they've been excellent the last couple of weeks. So
even Zdeno Chara has been, you know, somewhat productive.
Yeah. No, he has been, though. It's the 40-year-old athletes in Boston. It's the Tom Brady's. It's the David Ortiz's. There's something in the water.
Well, have we talked about this recently? Maybe this was floating around on Twitter, but Zdeno Chara has been getting more praise, and deservedly so, over the past, you know, month or so. Because you look at David Ortiz, all right, he was a designated hitter in a way less physically demanding game or sport. You look at Tom Brady, he's a quarterback, doesn't get hit a lot, has a great offensive line, gets rid of the ball quickly, and doesn't put himself in harm's way. Zdeno Chara can't help but be physical game in and game out, and he's still like on the ice for 20 minutes a night. It really is incredible to watch this guy do what he's doing at his age, even if he's lost a step, even if, you know, his puck control isn't what it used to be, and he's just not as quick. He's still. You know, a very productive defenseman and a great leader to have on a team. And
right,
you look at a guy who's that big and that old, you can't help but be in awe of what he's doing right now.
All right, and finally, spring training, Major League Baseball. What do you got?
You know, I don't really read too deep into the storylines. This is the week I start paying attention, though, when you have David Price getting his first start on the mound. He went three innings, gave him two earned runs. I think both of those runs were in that third inning. Eovaldi, who gave up one home run, a solo shot, which was the only earned run he had yesterday. And Eduardo Rodriguez, who's been pitching a lot lately. So I'm kind of just looking at the pitching. I think with hitting, guys are just trying to get their swing down, getting the bat on the ball, and not really, going at it with the same approach they do during the regular season. So I'm kind of just looking at the starting pitching, seeing how that's going to unfold, and obviously that bullpen. How are you going to fill that closer role? I think this is really the only thing that, you know, the spring training is going to be good for in regard to playing time. Who's going to get preferential treatment in that bullpen? Who's going to be the guy you go to and depend on? Right now, Barnes hasn't been solid, but again, it's spring training. It's not the regular season. And the reality is that sort of thing, the bullpen situation will probably hash itself out over the course of the season, the regular season.
So I'm going to stay in the AL East. I'm going to go up north though, to Toronto. And there's been a lot of talk this week about Vlad Guerrero. Vlad Guerrero Jr. is hurt now. He's not going to be with the team to start the season. I think we all agree this kid's ready for the major leagues, right? I don't – correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think I'm outside on expecting that.
No, I mean, from what I've heard, I haven't followed him too closely. But, I mean, you watch this guy in BP. You watch this guy's highlights. He clearly has a swing that's MLB ready.
Right. He murders baseballs.
All right, he's on route.
That's what he does. But so now, though, Toronto, they're not going to have him up at the beginning of the year. Some people think he's not going to come up this year at all. And a lot of people are critical of them for that. And I understand why. You have this great talent. He is baseball royalty, right? His family. He's somebody that's going to draw a lot of attention, and the league needs that right now. But it's not the Blue Jays' job to be the league's PR staff. It's their job to try to win a World Series. And I think back, Evan Drellick was tweeting about this yesterday, and I thought he made a really good point. Back in 2013, the Astros, right, they were a bottom feeder team, and they had drafted George Springer a couple years before, and Springer was 21, and he was ready. I think he hit like 360 between double and triple A that year. It was somewhere around there. I mean, he was clearly a major league ball player. He was a man among boys in the major leagues.
And Vlad's 380 last year.
Right, Vlad's 380, and he's 2 years younger for what it's worth, but they didn't bring Springer up. The Astros didn't. And it helps them in the long run because they end up with an extra year of control over him in the major leagues. Toronto's not winning anything this year. They're not even a top two team. They're maybe not even a top three team in that division. So why would they bring him up? To sell a couple more tickets? It's kind of like, to me, the conversation in the NBA with, should teams be allowed to bench superstars, get them rest? It's all about winning the title, not the regular season games, but it's a disservice to the fans. I think this is a little different because you're talking about a full year. You're talking about a guy that, you know, maybe, look, he's Vlad Guerrero Jr., but he doesn't have the same name recognition that, you know, when the Lakers bench LeBron or the Spurs bench Tim Duncan back in the day or whatever. I do like this move from Toronto. I think it is smart. I think they are thinking long term. And I think that the people who are bitter about it are just, you know, baseball hardos that are bitter that their sport's not at the top of the food chain. And they think that Vlad Guerrero Jr. will help them get there. So kudos to the Toronto Blue Jays. That's a good move, leaving Vlad Guerrero down in the minors this year, if that's what they choose to do. Now, if they come out in April and they're like 15-5 or whatever, yeah, bring them up. But if they are who we think they are, I think it's a good move to not waste the year on his contract to have this guy who's probably going to be, you know, a perennial MVP candidate, you know, sitting there at 19 years old on a team that's going to win 70 games. It's just not worth it.
Yeah. I mean, the MLB is, you know, starving for a player who is the kind of a player like Vladimir Guerrero, a guy who's a legacy in the MLB. He's got the Vlad Guerrero Jr. That is, he's got the name.
Right.
Just messed up. And you know, he's just a great fundamental hitter. He's someone who's huge. Like,
yeah, he looks the part of just an old school slugger.
He's got tree trunk legs. Like it's really ridiculous. This dude, I'm looking at his baseball reference right now. 6'2", 250. He looks even bigger than that though. So you're going to want a guy who just mashes baseballs. And I mean, he's one of them. And I don't think you have those pure power hitters. Not that he's a pure power. 380 again, only hit 20 home runs last year.
No, he's a great all-around hitter.
Great all-around hitter, but, I mean, he will evolve into probably someone who's bombed 40 home runs a year easy. So I get it. And yes, the MLB needs it. But I think Evan Drellick's point, the one that you just reiterated, if you're not winning anything this year and you're going to lose 1 year of control over this guy, yeah, why? I mean, it makes no sense. You're not – the Blue Jays aren't – you know, they're not trying to necessarily sell tickets. They're trying to win games, and they're trying to win games in the long run and compete for World Series. This guy is clearly a piece to do that. But why rush him in at 20 when, you know, when he's 24 and starting to enter sort of the prime of his career or getting close to that point? Then you have the foundation to actually compete for the AL East, let alone, you know, a World Series title.
Right. And again, it's a different conversation if he's like 24 right now and it's time to bring him up. And you're not going to leave somebody in the minors longer, but he's 19. Like he's way ahead of his development. You can give him that one extra year. All right, Lebowitz, you want to get to the takes?
Let's do it.
All right, on the other side, we'll talk takes. This is Calling It, powered by CLNS.
Calling It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
All right, welcome back to Calling It. Alex Barth and Alex Lebowitz with you on a Thursday. I just want to give the timeout again. 2:25 Thursday, March 14th, because I know as soon as we're done with this, Golden Tate is going to sign somewhere. The report right now, this is pre-recorded, that he's between the Patriots and the Steelers. So I just want everybody to know, we didn't miss Golden Tate signing. We recorded before, and it's going to happen right after because what was the one last week? Something happened like later in the day after we recorded, and it was semi-big news. Do you remember?
You know, it's slipping me right now. I remember you texting me about it, though. And by the way, it's 12:25, not 2:25. You said 2:25.
Thank you. 12:25. The Antonio Brown trade.
Yes. Yeah. that was definitely big news. I mean, it's inevitable. Something's going to happen between now and the weekend. This is just, unfortunately, this is the time we get to record. So
it's going
to
happen between now and the time I can get it edited and post. that's just the truth. All right. Let's do some hot takes. We tweeted out a call. We sent out the take symbol. We wanted people's hottest, most ridiculous takes of the day. We got some good ones. Most of them are sports related. One of them is not. Two of them are not, actually. We'll start with ours, though. Mine and yours are kind of similar. I think people are too high on the Browns right now. I think the Browns are a good team. I think there's certainly a world where they go 12-4. But I think there's also a world where they go 4-12. And it's a beautiful implosion. I think they are a finely tuned Italian sports car being driven by Gary Busey. Like, certainly the results could be outstanding, but look, Freddie Kitchens does not have a lot of experience as an NFL head coach. He's going to have some major personalities to manage. He's got a second-year quarterback who's going to have a spotlight on him like he's never had before. It's a lot of new pieces to fit into place between Hunt and Beckham and Verna and some pieces defensively as well. I think there's – look, are they going to be a good team? Yes, they're going to be a better team than they were last year. They have more talent. But the talent's at the top of the roster. As we know in New England, the top half of the roster will win you games, but it's the back half of the roster that wins you Super Bowls. How deep are you as a team roster construction-wise? That's what we're going to need to see from the Browns. Again, first-year coach. They have a tough schedule this year. I could see a situation where 9-7 wins the AFC North. They're going to be a fun team to watch. I don't mean to take anything away from that. They have a lot of talented players at the top of that roster. But the people are saying they're ready to take the throne. They are the Super Bowl favorites. It's just I would not put them in the Super Bowl discussion yet. Maybe in a year or two. I think they are, you know, a wild card, possibly division team. Certainly. I'm not putting them in the Super Bowl discussion yet. Not at all.
Not yet. I mean, but the thing is, they are kind of following that Los Angeles Rams mold, which is unprecedented. And I think you brought it up on Twitter before. It's difficult to build a team through free agency. You had to draft well, which the Rams have also done. But you can argue that the Browns are on their way with the style that they've drafted in the past few years.
It just sort of reminds me of that Eagles super team from 2011. And I tweeted this out. Remember, that was the team that they signed everybody in free agency. They had Mike Vick. Yeah. And then they went out and they added Nnamdi Azamwa. They added Derek Morgan. Mm-hmm. They added a lot of talent.
But they didn't add Kareem. Too. But Kareem Hunt is top three running back, although he'll be suspended for a lot of the year in the NFL.
No, and you go back and look at those names, and Nnamdi Azamwa is kind of a joke name now. I get that. That was a bad signing. But back at the time, back in 2011, lot of those guys were superstars. A lot of, like Derek Morgan, we don't really think of anymore, because he had such a brief window on small market teams. Derek Moore was a great player. So I don't know. I think there's a lot of similarities here.
Well, I still think that adding, Vernon and Beckham and Hunt, it's better than what the Eagles did even then. Because again, Odell Beckham Jr. is one of the most talented guys in the NFL for his position. It's unbelievable to watch that guy play. And they have a decent wide receiving core already. So I don't know. I think that I'm a little more optimistic with them than I think I was the 2011 Eagles. I think that they're making the right moves, and they still, again, they have drafted well. They have Myles Garrett. They have Baker Mayfield. They have a few pieces on that team that they got through the draft. So if there's ever a time to be confident in the Browns, I think it's now. And I think they had a decent year last year, despite the fact that Hugh Jackson was their coach for the first 6-7 weeks or whatever it was. My eyes are definitely going to be on them, and especially when you consider the Steelers just trade away their top target, and they officially don't have Le'Veon Bell on their roster anymore. That's done with. And Ben Roethlisberger is a year older. The Ravens are the Ravens, and the Bengals are the Bengals. So I think they're in a good position to really win that conference or that division. So, again, we'll have to see.
Before we get to your take, Nick Mecca, who does have a history of being correct on the hot take call, he says the Browns won't make the playoffs. I think that's a bit far. At the very least, they're a wild card team. At the very least, they're getting in.
Sure. And I mean, half of that, again, is because of the weakness of that division or the step down that it's taken. You brought up
just the weakness of the AFC. Like I said, wild card team, I mean, I don't think the Ravens are going to – well, we'll see with how long they stick with Lamar Jackson. But if the Ravens realize Lamar Jackson's not going to work, I think that team with that defense could win 9 games. Maybe the Browns also win 9 and they're the wild card team. Maybe the Steelers somehow still – maybe Juju has an incredible year. The Steelers put together 10 wins. I still think the Browns find a way in with 9. I think 9 wins is a wild card team in the AFC this year. We still have a long time to go. But as we stand here on March 14th, I think so.
I think they're an 11-win team. The roster the way it is, at least 11 games. That's just what I see. And you talk about the spotlight being on Baker Mayfield. I think he can handle it. I don't like the guy. I don't like his personality all that much, but I respect him. And I think that he's someone who does not shy away from the spotlight, does not shy away from being the guy or the face of a franchise or a team or what have you. So I think he'll be able to handle it. I think he does have some ice in his veins. Whether he has the talent to take this team to where he wants to, that's another question, but he'll be a year older, and I'm not expecting a sophomore slump from Mayfield.
All right, now the other side of things, and your take.
Yes, my take. I don't think that trading Odell Beckham Jr. was a horrible decision by the Giants, and I'll elaborate. I like Odell Beckham Jr. I used to be in the camp of someone who like thought, he's a douche. He flips out on the sidelines. He says stupid things to the media. He does do that, but teammates do like him. The reality is, was he heading down the same path as someone like Antonio Brown in regard to airing his grievances? Some argue that he was already down that path last season when he pretty much said that to the media. Is he someone who could deal with a rebuild, which is what this Giants team is in the middle of? And is he worth hanging on to given the size of his contract if you are trying to rebuild from scratch, essentially? So I understand it. I don't think it was a horrible move. I think that people are overreacting, because what is an elite wide receiver really going to get you if you don't have someone to throw the ball to him, or you don't have a defense to stop the opposing offense? I think that team has a lot of problems. Odell Beckham Jr. wasn't enough to solve all of them.
Look, you're going to need to bring in – the Giants have to know that they're going to have a young quarterback under center in the next year or two. I think deep down, and I know that there's this weird infatuation with Eli Manning playing until he's 60, but they have to know that. And, you know, you just talked about it, right? The Rams model. Well, you have that quarterback on that rookie deal. You can pay other guys more than they're worth. Beckham. Have Beckham there to help a young rookie quarterback along. I just don't get it. And look, if you have to trade him, fine. But then to come out and say that, what was the quote yesterday? They want to be a run heavy offense for Saquon Barkley. They're not gonna put emphasis on the wide receiver position. That's a great idea if it's 2002, but it's 2019. You have to throw the ball to win football games. I don't care how good Saquon Barkley is. The offensive line's not going to help him much. And then to say you don't care about wide receivers and put a first-round tender on Corey Coleman, who got cut 5 times last year, that guy? You put a first-round tender on that guy when you don't care about wide receivers? Look, I think in a bubble, you're right. Trading Beckham, in theory, isn't the worst move for the Giants. But when you put the whole thing in context, with their quarterback situation, kind of where they're at roster constructionally without him, I can't agree with that take. I think it was altogether an awful decision. I don't hate the return. I don't. That's not the part that bugs me. It's just when you're trying to build a winning football team in 2019, given where they're at right now, that's the exact guy you want to have.
I guess. I think you're conflating, you know, the decisions they've made, you know, as a whole, like the multiple decisions they've made, which have led them to this point, and this individual move. I think this specific move is kind of the result of bad decisions being made in the past and the Giants being in the position that they are in today. And you point out the handling of a guy like Eli Manning. Why the hell is he still on that team? That's my question. And that's why I don't feel bad for this Giants front office, because they've made questionable decisions. So honestly, you can't really give them the benefit of the doubt.
I think you have to look at it all in context, don't you?
To an extent, I think, but that's, again, that's saying I'm angry that it's gotten to this point rather than this move stunk. I think it's the former as opposed to the latter. That's the real problem.
I don't think they were in that bad of a spot before they made this. But look, they weren't in a great spot. I'll say that. They were not, but especially for this year. But they could have either traded for Rosen or taken a quarterback this year. And then you let Eli Manning play out one more season, and yeah, Beckham might not be happy, but then you have the quarterback, the running back, the wide receiver. They had some decent pieces defensively. And then you can go at it, build the offensive line, which tends to be the last step, and you go. And you have the young quarterback on the cost control contract, and you have playmakers placed down around him. You can't set that up now, because even if they draft a quarterback this year, who is he throwing to? How are you replacing Odell Beckham? I'm sorry, Sterling Shepard is not that guy. You're not just going to bring in that electric playmaker. And again, I think Saquon Barkley is a good player. All right, he is. But you know who else is a good running back? Zeke Elliott. Where'd his team finish this year? Yeah, Alvin Kamara got the Saints far, but that team also has Michael Thomas and Drew Brees. The one exception might be Todd Gurley, but I think to some, Todd Gurley is the best running back in football outside of Le'Veon Bell, who didn't play last year. So I just don't see how this is a good long-term move for the Giants. That's what I keep hearing. Long-term, it makes sense. Long-term, it makes sense. I just don't think – I don't see how it is. I don't. Other than it frees up cap space,
yeah.
I don't understand how it's a good long-term move. Because I'll tell you what, that Browns first-round pick, that's not going to be – that's in the 20s, maybe the 30s. Yeah. That's not a good pick. That's not a pick you're drafting Odell Beckham with. So I don't see it.
You could draft Antonio Brown with that pick.
That is true. But, you know, if – everybody drafted those receivers in the fifth round, Antonio Brown wouldn't have gotten the kind of money he just did from the Raiders. Real quick before we move to the next take, did you see the press conference with him and Gruden? Did you watch that?
Brown, I didn't. I heard that he was late, though.
He was late, and it was just – they are, like, really into each other. They were just getting, like, super goofy and ridiculous, like
– getting it on the podium?
No, it was just, like – it just looked like a sitcom. Like, they were both making just really bad dad jokes back and forth to each other the whole time. It was weird. I wonder
if he has the same relationship with Mark Davis.
Mark Davis wasn't there. Mark Davis was probably taking Southwest Airlines to buy Chick-fil-A. How about the Raiders being – the Raiders are out of money. Like, real quick acknowledge that? The Raiders couldn't sign Le'Veon because they don't have enough cash on hand. Not cap space, cash on hand. All right. I want to run through some more of these takes here because we haven't even gotten to anybody else's really. Evan Milo, Kyrie will not – not in all caps. Kyrie Irving will not be leaving Boston this summer. I mean, I think everybody knows how we feel about that. That qualifies as a hot take at this point, though, I think.
I think it does. And I think, in other words, his hot take is the Celtics will make a run this postseason, because that's the only way Kyrie Irving decides to stay.
So there was another take. It was him or somebody else. He might have had it. Here's a take. People don't know what quote tweet means. They all came in the replies, and it makes it hard to keep track of. Somebody had the Celtics being out in the first round. I don't remember who it was.
That was Dan Butek.
Dan Butek had the Celtics being out in the first round. They might have both been Evan. Oh, he did. Okay, so good for Dan. Dan gets a gold star, but Kyrie not leaving Boston this summer. Well, let me ask it: which is more likely? Kyrie sticks around, or the Celtics get bounced in the first round?
The Celtics getting bounced in the first round for sure. Because they're right in that in between point where they could be a four, they could be a six seed, or maybe they can be a three seed. We don't know. And I don't really like any matchup in the middle of that playoff, the playoff hunt. I think they can lose to any of those teams. You know, maybe not the Sixers. I trust them against the Sixers, but there are a few other teams in that hunt that I just don't know if I'd have confidence in the Celtics making it out. At least I wouldn't be surprised. But again, it comes down to whether or not they respond or whether or not they finish the season strong. If they play the Pacers in a series, or they play the Sixers in a series, I don't know how I feel about them. I feel better if they play the Sixers than the Pacers. But I don't know. It depends how they finish the season out. I think that shows the importance this season specifically of trying to finish with the higher seed, because the Celtics don't have the luxury of being a favorite, of being dominant. They've been pretty brutal all season long, and I don't have any confidence in them, and I don't have any confidence that Kyrie likes it here at all.
I think those two could be related too. I think the deeper the Celtics go in the playoffs, the more likely he comes back. But I think if they do get bounced in the first round, that's going to be a tough, a tough sell for Kyrie to come back. Like, hey, we're not that close. You know, you guys aren't that close. Why should I come back? I can go play with Durant in New York. So an interesting one there. Next up, that's your take. We're saving that one for last. Sorry, I'm reading them off my phone here. The Rams won't win the NFC West in 2019. That's from Tyler Brandt. I get the Super Bowl hangover with that team. I think that's a legitimate concern, but I don't know who else is winning it. That's kind of what I'm stuck on.
The 49ers are going to make a push. The Seahawks.
Maybe the Seahawks do. They have Russell Wilson, so you can't count them out, but I still think the Rams can win 11, 12 games, even with a Super Bowl hangover. It's an interesting take. It's interesting to think about. If Russell Wilson does get hot, it's certainly possible. I'm guessing that because he didn't give a team, it's more of an indictment on the Rams than propping up one of those other teams in division. I do think they'll take a step back. I just don't think anybody's good enough to catch them, even if they do take a step back.
Yeah, same here. I also think we'll see Sean McVay's real worth this season. How does his team respond the year after, a pretty embarrassing loss to the Patriots in the Super Bowl? We'll see a lot from the Rams. I just don't know if I see the Seahawks challenging them. I just don't think that Russell Wilson alone is enough to topple that team. 49ers could take a step up, but again, 500 is pretty much their ceiling this season, and obviously the Cardinals are a disaster. So, yeah, I don't know if I can see them losing that division. It's possible.
Maybe this is somebody who's just very high on Kyler Murray.
Maybe. That's true. And we don't know. Are the Cardinals going to draft him? Is that a...
I think, yes, in air quotes.
They're doing it for trade bait, maybe.
I don't know. It's I don't know. We'll discuss that kind of when it gets
further down.
There.
Yeah, yeah, I got you.
All right, let's get to the non-sports takes. This is from Connor Weingarten. Game of Thrones not on the Mount Rushmore of TV dramas. Connor, I agree with you. I've tried to start it numerous times. I can never get past the first couple of episodes.
Really?
I'm not a Lord of the Rings guy or any of
that.
You're not
a fantasy, medieval guy.
Yeah, so maybe that's just me, but I feel like there's a common thread with these shows that everybody props up. You have to watch. Like Making a Murder. I thought Making a Murder was boring as hell.
Oh, wow.
That just, and I like those sort of crime shows. I do. I just,
evidently not.
I just thought it was the way it was presented was just way too slow.
Yeah.
Not dramatically enough. I don't know. I didn't like it.
I don't know.
I'm
sorry.
No, you're good. I'm trying to think of those other shows that everybody says you have to watch.
Breaking Bad is incredible.
So I would say Breaking Bad is the one exception. Everybody and was worried about Breaking Bad. I got another one for you, and people can jump down my throat for this. Walking Dead. Walking Dead doesn't do it for me.
Brutal. I hate Walking Dead.
It's just the same thing. There's one cool scene, and then it's just that same scene over and over and over again with different characters.
I wonder how they're going to die. Are they going to get eaten by zombies eaten by zombies?
There's no element of surprise in a show that really should be all about the element of surprise. So that's show that, you know, I feel like a lot of times these shows everybody says you need to watch are wildly overrated again. Breaking Bad, I will call the one exception.
Okay, let's just decipher a few, though. Walking Dead isn't in that category. I don't think anyone puts Walking Dead in that category.
Oh, I think absolutely. Oh.
Yeah, but those people aren't to be trusted. They don't have legitimate opinions that people listen to. In my opinion, I don't know anyone whose opinion on television I take seriously who says Walking Dead is one of the best shows. I watched the first season. It was actually pretty good. Then I kept watching it, and I'm like, oh. It's the same thing every single season.
Right.
Prison Break is another one. I had friends who try to get me into that. The dumbest show of all time. I'll go on record. The dumbest show of all time is Prison Break. That's just a side note. Breaking Bad is incredible. Better Call Saul, I need to get back into.
Better Call Saul, because I think the expectations were too high for me. I couldn't enjoy it. I think Breaking Bad. Maybe I need to watch more. I only watched the first season. I honestly haven't tried it since. I'll give you another one that – you know, it's still don't jump down. It's a good show. It's a very good show, but I don't know that it necessarily deserves the praise it gets.
Sopranos.
The Office.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Hang on. The Sopranos is an excellent television show.
Hold on a second. Stop deflecting.
I cannot believe you just said that.
I was guessing what you were going to say. I wasn't saying it personally. I was guessing what you were going to say.
But do you believe that?
No, I haven't gone through the entire series. It's good. It's very
okay,
good.
Okay, cool. Finish Sopranos and we'll talk about it. Okay. The Office is a good show, but there are systemic flaws in The Office that people either fail to notice or choose to ignore.
Yeah, you're wrong, but go ahead.
Jim is actually kind of a bad guy. He's kind of a dick.
To Dwight.
No, not just to Dwight. Not only – I mean, look, Dwight comes from a different background than everybody else, and I think Jim at times takes advantage of that. He bullies Dwight. I think, you know, if that happened in the real world, there'd certainly be people calling for harassment on Twitter. And he also
– Michael Scott, yeah.
He also just nonstop – Michael Scott's a racist. Both these characters are supposedly heroes. But back to Jim.
No, but
everybody – hold on. Let me say this. Jim's a supposed like great romantic, right? Like all these girls, I'm just trying to find the Jim to my Pam.
He's way better than Pam in that relationship.
Jim nonstop is flirting with an engaged woman until she breaks off her engagement, then leaves her with a kid and moves to another city.
No, you're ridiculous. Because Pam, what Pam did is she was a receptionist and she didn't want to move to Philadelphia for a job that probably paid three times the amount to Jim when he was following his dreams because she didn't want to leave Scranton, Pennsylvania. She was the one who held him back.
Okay, anything that happens after they got married, like the finale should have been the wedding. That was a amazing episode of television. One of the best episodes of any TV show I've ever seen.
The last two seasons are a little fishy. Anything after
Michael Scott leaves is irrelevant. Frankly, I've never even watched it. I watched a couple episodes, but that's it. Anything after Jim and Pam get married to me, it took such a dive. But again, he spent all this time just going after this woman who was engaged.
He was so good.
Jim is not a good person.
Oh my God.
People just ignore
him. You're the only one who thinks that Jim was the bad person in that relationship.
I never said Pam was a saint either. I never said that.
So that's a match made in heaven, is what you're saying.
They're both horrible people.
That's ridiculous. And Michael Scott being a racist, the joke is he's ignorant, not that he's a racist.
That's fair.
And he's dumb. So it's making fun of people who hold the beliefs that he does, because he's obviously plays this dumb guy who's super ignorant and is offensive when he's not trying to be. He's just so socially unaware that he can't catch himself when he is being, you know, kind of bigoted. But it's hilarious. Like, those are the things he says. He's the funniest sitcom character of all time, the best sitcom of all time. And that's coming from someone who is a massive Seinfeld fan. What's better than Seinfeld in The Office?
I mean, I there are a couple of shows. Frankly, I don't know that it's better. Parks and Rec's a lot closer.
Oh, God. Oh, Parks and Rec's tried to do what The Office did and failed miserably. There's funny things in Parks and Rec's, but it doesn't even compare.
I think they're close and people give credit for it. One more thing on The Office, and then you can criticize me for saying this and we can move on. The Ryan and Kelly storyline, that's just BJ Novak trying to get himself screen time to launch his acting career. That was so forced and so annoying. They didn't need that.
No, that was throughout the series. That was a key thing. That was a big part.
Right, but he was so annoying. Was it,
he was a writer on that show, you know.
Yeah, I know it wasn't. He wrote that storyline so he could get more screen time, so he could launch his acting career. No. The thing with him, like, defrauding the company or whatever for the website, like, that was good. Him and Kelly was just annoying.
Well, that's the point.
I could have done without that.
It was another romance, office romance, that was just the two insufferable people.
The only good character dynamic that they actually used, the only two characters they put together that made sense together that was entertaining.
Dwight and Angela.
Andy and Angela.
Ooh.
Because they were such opposites, and it was so ridiculous, and you could so tell how she was playing him. That was funny to me.
With that logic, you can say Jan and Michael Scott, where Jan Levinson and Michael Scott were two of the best.
That was also annoying.
But that was a brutal couple as well.
They set it up. They wrote it like, can't happen, it can't happen. And then the writers got lazy. They're like, oh, never mind, it can happen.
They didn't get lazy. Like, it's one of the most well-written shows ever. Like, oh,
she got drunk. Cool.
Oh my God! How dare you, lazy?
Look, it's a great show. It is one of the greatest shows of our lifetime.
It's written by Greg Daniels. Greg Daniels, who's the Simpsons guy, and that's your favorite show.
But I do love the Simpsons. Look, it's a great show. Is it on the Parthenon of television history? I do not put it on the same level as the Simpsons. I do not. Ugh. It is not on the Parthenon. It's maybe one step below. Okay. Ugh. It is the Drew Brees of television shows.
Right.
Excellent. Excellent. One of the best of its era. But are you putting it in the all-time conversation? No. No. No, it is not the Tom Brady of television.
It is incredible.
I don't know what the Tom Brady of television shows is, but it is not The Office.
It's probably The Simpsons because it's been around for so long. But
it could be The Simpsons. It could. Well, are we just talking comedies or are we just talking TV shows?
No, it's actually South Park. Because South Park has aged way better than The Simpsons, with all due respect.
That's fair. That's actually a good point. The Office, a great show over. And I know for a fact that people live above me. I can hear them watching The Office all the time. I hear the theme song.
Good, good, good people.
I'm waiting for them to knock at the door because I'm sure they can hear me yelling about this.
They're good people.
I'm waiting for the knock on the door. All right, we got one more take we have to get to before we wrap this up. This comes from a friend of the show, Jake Asman. Can hear him on SB Nation Radio. He was a replier, not a quote tweeter, by the way. So I should give him a demerit for this.
The master of Twitter, too. This man is on Twitter more than anyone I know.
This is just such a great take. I love that he stokes this conversation. Alex Lebowitz is handsome. That's a hot take.
That's a bold
take. I don't know. There's room for discussion here.
How dare you? That's a lukewarm take. That's a fact. It's not a take. It's a fact. I'm a handsome man.
You think so?
why are you taking this angle? You trying to hurt me?
I don't know that are you handsome or are you just what's the term? I'm trying to think of what's the Yiddish term.
I don't know. I'd have to
see, I would more use the term mensch for you. I would use the term mensch.
I look like a Jewish boy.
I'm not saying you're not a good looking individual. I don't know that handsome is the term for you.
I'm very handsome.
I want to get into the semantics on
okay. I got a great jawline, first of all. My nose is symmetrical to my face. I got high cheekbones.
Now, Steve, is the nose thing a shot at me?
No, I
like to think I have a great jawline. It's hidden right now because I'm growing a disgusting off-season beard. But I do think I have a great jawline. I know my nose is my weakest feature besides my personality.
You see, and that's the problem.
And apparently my thoughts on The Office, not a great character trait. But
that's a horrible character trait. But I don't have a facial weakness. So there you go. I got a good hairline. My grandfather, when he passed, he still had his hair. My other grandfather's 89. He has a full head of hair right now.
Everybody in my family's bald as hell. I'm saving up for Rogaine.
So good luck to you there. I'm going to be good to go. Guess what? I'll be a silver fox by the time I'm 45, but I'll rock that as well. I'm handsome, man. I'm handsome. I got confidence. I need to lose weight though.
We might have to put that's the thing. Handsome to me is more like, it's not so much about the facial features. It's like the trim, you know, like no, narrow face, like James Bond sort of look. Handsome is – okay, maybe where we're disagreeing on the definition then. Again, I think mensch when I think Alex Leibowitz.
I appreciate that. I think I am that as well. Although that's not a physical thing. A mensch is, you know,
I think there's a physical element to it.
No, it's how you act. You're a mensch. You're good egg. You're a good boy. You perform a lot of mitzvahs.
Let me ask you. So you're calling Bono a mensch?
Bono? No, he's a douche.
But he does. He does a lot of charity. He does, but he doesn't.
Have you ever seen the South Park episode?
He's not somebody. Yes. He's not somebody you. But he's done a lot of charity. He's a good person. He performed the greatest Super Bowl halftime show of all time.
Probably.
But he's not somebody you look at and think mensch because he just doesn't look the part.
Well, he's Irish. It's like the opposite of being a Jew. So it's like,
but that's the point. That's the point I'm making.
Okay, so I'm a Jewish looking man. So you're a mensch too. You look like you're Jewish. I look like I'm Jewish. We all look Jewish.
Yeah, but I'm not a good person.
So it's a multifaceted thing.
It's
it's physical and it's about your action. Okay, I get the definition. I still think I'm handsome. I also think I'm a mensch.
That's fair. That's fair. Should we get you? Do you want to? Is your mom home? Do you want to see if she weighs
in? My mom
on
thinks I'm very
birthday?
Handsome. But she's biased.
A little bit.
Yeah.
All right. We might have to put a poll up on Twitter for this.
Don't do that. I don't want to be
heard. I might. I just kind of want to see the results.
Can I pick the picture?
No, I won't put a picture. I'll just ask it. I'll tag you. It'll be whatever your Twitter picture is.
Well, people might think I'm Luke Wilson then. That's actually good.
That would go. I'll tell you what. You can pick the picture. We'll see if we can get – Asmund's got what, 8,000 followers?
9,000.
9,000. We just hit 9,000. Congrats to him. We don't know most of them. So they'll be unbiased. We'll see if we can get him to retweet it.
This is gonna hurt me. I'm just gonna be hurt. You want to hurt me?
I mean, look, you talk about people needing to be tougher online. You know, put your money where your mouth is here, man.
But I don't want to put myself out to be targeted. That's my.
I mean, look, hey guys, are you
handsome? Like, that's just.
Are you on Tinder or any of those?
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Tinder, Bumble.
I mean, how is this any different than that?
MySpace.
I'm trying to expedite the process here. Maybe your future wife sees that tweet, says, hell yeah, he's handsome, votes yes, slides in the DMs.
That's what I want. I want to meet my wife on Twitter.
How's it that different from Tinder?
It's not, but I don't want to meet my wife on Tinder either.
All right. That's starting a whole other discussion that we don't need to have, that we don't need on the public record. So, all right, that'll do it for the show. We'll do another hot take segment soon. If anybody has any more takes about Leibowitz's appearance, I'd love to hear them. You can send those and hear more shows on our Twitter at Colin the Podcast, and you can check the show out online.
One more thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
I am not very photogenic, but I'm still handsome. I look better in person than I do on camera.
Is that a cop-out?
It's not a cop-out. It's the truth.
I'm the other way around.
Really?
I photograph much better than I look in person.
Yeah.
Because I don't have to worry about people seeing my profile. My profile is not great. Again, the nose.
Yeah, you do.
For people, this is all audio, and there might be a couple people listening to this who have never seen me in person. My nickname, and I've been nicknamed Toucan Sam.
Oh, jeez. That's anti-Semitic. Come on.
I mean, I think we were a little too young to understand that.
And you're from Sharon.
Yeah. So, there were some Jewish kids. It might have been a Jewish kid or two who came up with that.
Yeah, maybe like only 7 out of every 10 people.
Yeah, so we'll stop going down this road, though. So check out more of the show, clmsmedia.com. We'll be back next week. The Patriots signed Golden Tate while we were discussing your appearance. No, nobody signed Golden Tate. All right. So, I mean, we'll kind of clean up on free agency with just about everything done. We will talk about March Madness, baseball, Red Sox opening day starter. That's an interesting conversation we didn't have time for today. All of that. Until then, for Alex Leibowitz, I'm Alex Barth. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.